Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Stahl with another in our Journey series, interviews with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers. Today we continue our conversation with Don Miller. Let's learn a little bit about your own journey. It's interesting because you were raised in the church, but without your father.
Right.
Talk about that whole dynamic.
Yeah, my dad left when I was a kid, when I was just an infant, so I never knew him. We made a couple visits, my sister and I, to him. So I have very vague, ghost-like memories of my dad. And my family was sort of a family that didn't talk very much about faults. And so I'm 31 now, and literally 2 months ago, when my mother read this book, is the first time that she and I had ever had a conversation about my father.
Really?
Yeah, and so we're just a family that doesn't open up. It's funny, because I'll open up in a book to the world and not to, you know, people in my own family, because there's just this sense that there's just things you don't talk about,
yeah.
Especially weaknesses.
Yeah.
And, but it affected my thoughts about God. You know, my church pastor growing up would refer God as Father, and of course I didn't know what that meant. I mean, a father to me meant nothing. There was just nothing there. And so it even frightened me for a while, because I imagined God wanting to move into the house and share a bed with my mom, is what I say in the book. And I didn't like that idea.
Yeah.
And then later, that the idea of God developed from being a father to the idea of him being like a slot machine, in terms of its, you know, prayer is just pulling a lever and you're hoping that the cherries line up and maybe you get some good fortune or something like that. And so I had these really skewed ideas about God growing up, all the way into my late 20s.
Huh, interesting.
And
now, you regularly refer to raised in the church, so I'm taking it church was an important thing to your mother, and you were a kind of a Sunday school kid, a VBS kind of kid, all that stuff.
Yeah, there was no question I was raised within the religion of Christianity.
Did you perceive yourself to be a Christian? Or?
Absolutely. I would have referred to myself as
okay.
a Christian, there's no question.
You talk about at the age of 10, you begin your life of sin, as so many young boys do, and you talk about the guilt that came out of that, and then you tell a really interesting story about good old mom, and you basically spending all the money you had allocated for Christmas presents on yourself instead of your mom. It was interesting, though, that thing of guilt, you understood that concept at a fairly young age, 10 years old.
Guilt is just something that happened to me, and it's beyond the I did something wrong kind of guilt. It was more into the, what happened was my mother gave me $10 or something like that to spend on the family for Christmas presents. Of course, I'm only, I think, 12 years old at this time. Well, I went to the local Walmart and bought a bunch of fishing lures so that I could, for myself.
Sure.
Then I had about a buck left, and there was this Christian bookstore, and I got something off the bargain shelf for my mother.
Yeah.
Well, Christmas Eve night, I had been thinking about myself for the past month, and it hit me what I had done, and it got me, and I just remember feeling a feeling I've never felt since, a sense of guilt, a sense that whatever was the problem in the world, anywhere in the world, was my fault.
Well, and it's interesting because you talk in a chapter, What I Learned on TV, you're talking about watching, I think it was Nightline, and seeing some, you know, massive world problem. And you talk to your friend Tony the Beat Poet, who you essentially get into a conversation about the sin nature. And then you make reference to, it's kind of like the fundamentalist Christians believe, but really, you know, I'm not one. And then you talk in that chapter about realizing that whether it's a big, massive world problem, whatever it is, that at certain levels we are part of the problem. What's interesting to me about this connection that kind of recurs through the book is that there is this doctrine of sin in classic Christian theology, and in the way you converse about it with somebody like Tony the Beat Poet, it makes sense to him. As a matter of fact, he volunteers that kind of theological proposition to you.
Yes.
I think that's important to understand about this generation.
Yeah, it absolutely is. When somebody says to me sin or sin nature, I usually step back, because to me it means it's just drawing a line in the sand, and you're saying, and to me, somebody is saying, these people are better than these people, and I don't like it. I don't like when somebody brings up that idea. But at the same time, on the flip side of that coin, there's this idea that there's something broken inside of me.
Yes.
That there's a penalty for that brokenness,
yeah.
And I'm looking for something outside of myself to fix me.
Yeah.
That is true in my experience.
Yeah.
And so that it's just the same word, and it means means two different things. When I go to church and somebody talks about sin or sin nature, they're usually talking about somebody other than themselves.
Yes.
I can't identify with that, nor do I want to. Because
but is that the problem with the way they're applying sin to the other person, or that we Christians don't apply it properly to ourselves?
I don't think a human being applies it properly to himself. I don't want to draw a line and say Christians and non-Christians. It's a realization that I got watching Ted Koppel go through the Congo one week on Nightline when I saw that something like 75% of the men in this certain village had raped multiple women.
Yeah.
And there are, of course, 2.5 million people killed there in the last 3 years in the Congo.
Yeah.
And so I asked myself, if I had been raised in one of these tribes in the Congo by the same family, under the same circumstances,
yep,
would I be killing people and raping women?
Great question.
And it's a tough question because if I say no, then I say, well, I'm higher evolved than those guys. And that, of course, is where Hitler began.
Yeah.
If I say yes, then I'm capable of all sorts of atrocities. That's the question, literally watching Nightline, that just sunk me for a week.
Now, when we get back to your journey, you did have a fundamentalist Christian summer. You refer to them as like the SEALs. I mean, high-performance Christian fundamentalists.
Yeah.
And you did lead a ministry of college students in Houston, in which you said the more attention you got, the stranger you became. So you kind of did find yourself vulnerable to the religiosity that is the counterfoil of a lot of what you're interacting with once you get to read. How did those things happen? How did you end up in those situations, the fundamentalist camp, the Houston ministry, and what was it that drove you out of them?
I think that the disgust with myself after having met some of the people who were the quote-unquote enemy. I'm talking about gays. I'm talking about pagans, political liberals. Met those guys, and they liked me, and I liked them. And I could, and so now I'm dealing with these people that I really like, that I think are good people, that want to do something about the problems on the planet. And yet I'm not supposed to like them because they're supposed pagans. And again, I was a part of a very conservative Christian movement. I mean, a very, very conservative Christian movement, perhaps more conservative than any of your listeners are familiar with. And so we were literally taught that it was us against them, that there was an enemy, and the enemy had skin on. And I met the enemy, and I really liked them. And that of course, threw me for a loop, and I had to...
Did you anywhere along the line have any perception of Jesus as the person that hung around with those people?
No, not until I got there did I realize that Jesus was relevant in this place. And, of course, we're talking about Reed College, which Princeton Review called... one of the most godless campuses in the country, at least a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I found people there, and Christians there, who I loved more than any people I'd ever met in my life.
But even before you got to Reed, you left the Houston thing because it wasn't feeling right. What wasn't feeling right about it?
I felt like a hypocrite. I felt like I was...
How so?
I felt like I was speaking for God and teaching for God,
but
not connecting with God.
So you were given the right answers to people that wanted to hear answers,
exactly.
but they weren't actually connecting at any personal level in your life, and
not
you were just kind of, you were kind of like, well, I think you even referred to it as you're kind of like the salesperson.
That's exactly how I felt. I felt like an infomercial for God, and I in no way felt like I was connected.
When you told the pastor that was going on, or your supervisor, what kind of reaction did you get?
Well, I got take a vacation. Take a couple weeks, and I explained to him that I needed
more than that. Yeah, oh, man.
Join us for our next podcast with Don Miller. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse.